they're always going to say this. You're just going to have to be willing when you're ending it with a manipulator, an abuser, a narcissist, whatever you want to call them. You're going to have to accept the fact that they are going to say stuff like that. You're going to have to accept the fact that they're going to have their own story in which they're the victim and you're this awful person and they're going to try to tell you all this stuff, and you have to be willing to walk away. Don't give it any time. Don't give it any energy. Don't give it any reaction or any response, because it's just going to suck you back in. I'm Meredith Miller, and this is the Inner Integration Podcast, where you can learn the mindsets and tools to help you heal after narcissistic abuse. One of the most common search terms in the genre of narcissistic abuse is leaving the narcissist. This episode is an exploration of that extraction process as you remove yourself from the grip of a narcissist. Last episode was on no contact, an important boundary to put in place once you leave the narcissist. This episode is a guide to help you set yourself up for success so you can leave the narcissist or other manipulative person. This episode will mostly apply to intimate relationships with manipulative characters, but you could apply similar concepts to leaving another kind of relationship, like a friendship or coworkership. There are a lot of subconscious mind and primal brain mechanisms working against you in the process of leaving a manipulative, abusive person. This is why it's so important to set yourself up for success in this extraction process. You don't want to walk into this blind. You'll need awareness, a plan, maybe some time to carry out that plan. Then comes the actual extraction. And then a very challenging part that people often overlook, which is staying away once you've left. This is much more challenging when you're living with the abuser, and even more so if you're financially dependent. If you've never moved in together, count your lucky stars, because this will be a lot easier for you. Just remember, no matter what your situation is, there's always a way out. It might look impossible, and surely the abuser has convinced you of that. But remember, there is always a way out. The very first thing you need to do is shift your mental perspective into that possibility. If you keep telling yourself there's no way out, that's exactly what you'll convince yourself of. It's an illusion. The prison bars aren't real. It's just a hologram, a simulated and false reality. Once you believe leaving is possible, that's when your plan can start to come together and you can start filling in the details like financial independence, moving to a new place, or maybe finding a temporary place like a friend, a family member, a domestic violence shelter, changing your phone number, hiding your address, purging all the paraphernalia, the souvenirs, the memories of your ex. Make a realistic plan that puts you in the driver's seat. This plan should not have a rescue fantasy or hope that someone will save you or that you will win the lottery. You need to save yourself. Otherwise, you're going to stay where you're at, and you could even end up in a more abusive situation with another predator disguised as your savior. Of course, you may need to outsource some help, like hiring movers, calling the police, hiring an attorney, finding childcare, etc. Figure out what you want and where you want to go next. Remember, this doesn't have to be your forever home or your forever job. This is a stepping stone. You might have to sacrifice some comforts in this process for a short while, like sleeping on a friend's sofa or renting a small apartment that doesn't have all the amenities that you would like to have. You can do anything temporarily if you set your mind to it and if you know that there's an end date. If you share children with this person, you must get legal counsel before moving or taking the kids anywhere. You need to know what your rights and responsibilities are in the case of co-parenting. Be careful, because if you take the kids out of state or out of country without the proper permission, you could actually get charged with kidnapping. Some countries like Peru won't even let you leave with your child without a notarized legal agreement signed by the other parent giving you permission to leave the country with your child or children. Legal advice is necessary if you have kids, whether you are married or not. If you don't have any financial resources, check into your local legal clinics where they often offer free or reduced cost legal help for people who are in financial hardships. Leaving is the hardest part. The next part is not so easy either, and it's very precarious because many people go back many, many times to the abuser. This is the part where you must maintain your boundaries and stay away from the manipulator. This episode will focus on the challenges that come as you're preparing to leave and shortly after you've left. These are the steps you will want to take in order to set yourself up for success in the leaving process. Step one is going no contact. That means 100% no contact. This means not stalking their social media, not looking at photos, or wearing their old sweatshirt around the house, or driving by their work or home, or any other form of indulging in nostalgia, or indirect ways of pretending that you're no contact when you're actually not. Listen to the last episode that we made on no contact. There's an interview that I did with Kim Saeed at the beginning of that episode to help you with this very, very important step. Step two is write the sobriety list. You could journal this, but it's best to have a separate notebook or sheets of paper that are just for this. I recommend using actual paper, not digital notes in your computer. You want to be able to touch it, look at it, feel it, and know that it's real. So on this list, you're going to put everything hurtful, manipulative, abusive, mean, everything that you can remember that that person did since the very beginning when you first met them. Now, this list might be quite long, especially if you were in this relationship for a really long time. That's okay. And as time goes on, you might have more flashbacks and memories of things that they did, and you can keep adding to this list. Read the sobriety list. Anytime your mind wants to indulge in the false guilt, the fear of leaving, the fantasy of what it could be, the illusion of what it was, the denial or the toxic hope that it could be any different. This is the part that I call relentlessly facing the truth. This is really important work to do in stage one of the recovery process. This relentless facing of the truth starts to weaken the trauma bond. If you want more information on the trauma bond, check out episode one of our podcast. This sobriety list essentially snaps you out of the trance of the abuse cycle. It keeps you sober. It keeps you out of the fog, the fear, the obligation, and the guilt. It overrides the abuse amnesia, where your brain actually deletes the awful parts and wants to remember only the quote-unquote good moments or good side of the abuser. This is a survival mechanism in the primal brain. Essentially, this sobriety list is you using your conscious mind to get control over your subconscious mind and primal brain so you can retrain them to serve you rather than harm you in your recovery. Start taking the reins of your mind back. This is challenging but necessary. Step three is educate yourself on narcissistic abuse and recovery. Most people stop at that first part. They want to read everything about the narcissist or the other abuser, whoever they were, and they want to read about the narcissistic abuse, but only a smaller percentage of people move on to educating themselves on the recovery process and actually carry it through. It's a lot easier to look outside ourselves. While it's important to learn about these predators and how they work in order to avoid them in the future, as well as to make sense of the past, if you stop there, you will keep getting abused. Because even though you know all the red flags, you haven't done the inner work on your self-trust, on your self-worth, and rebuilding your self-love. So you're going to doubt yourself every time, and you're going to get sucked into another abusive person or situation. Doing the inner self-healing work is necessary for you to uplift yourself out of the victim stage, stage one, and into the survivor stage, stage two. The fourth step is accountability and support. Get some allies. These might be your friends, family, someone in an online support group, or a support group that you attend in person to help you stay accountable to your decision to leave the abuser. You may also want to hire professionals like therapists, coaches, holistic healers, etc., to help you get through this time. And finally, remember that the normal rules of human engagement do not apply to manipulators. Everything that you would do when you leave a normal person or relationship is probably the exact opposite of what you need to do when leaving a manipulator. In episode 4 on boundaries, Angelina mentioned sneaking away and moving when the abuser is at work or traveling. In episode 5, Kim mentioned doing the same thing during one of the silent treatments, one of the disappearing acts of the abuser. If you didn't live with them, you might choose to end the relationship via text or email, something that you would never do with a normal person in a normal relationship, but this is an abusive relationship, so safety comes first. Here are some of the best clips from my YouTube videos on leaving the narcissist. To leave the narcissist or not to leave the narcissist. This topic has been coming up a lot with clients and emails and things that I'm getting from people. So I want to address this topic with the most important question that you can ask yourself if you're in this dilemma of do you leave or do not leave? That could be an intimate relationship. It can be a job where you're working with a narcissist. It could be some other situation. It could be a place that you're moving. Somebody's there that's involved that you don't want to be there. So what is the most important question, the parameter to ask yourself, and then how to overcome the biggest obstacle in this process? Leaving might also mean going no contact. Like maybe you left or you distanced yourself from a family member or the whole family and you're considering no contact, but you're not really sure if you can do it or if you want to do it or not. So I have two things for you. One is that most important question, which is this simple, right? Are you ready? Do you really want to gamble everything on that person or that relationship that brought you so much pain and tension and confusion and doubt and disharmony into your life? And when I say everything, I mean, do you want to risk your health, your sanity, your well-being, your sense of peace and joy, your ability to be successful at what you do, either the job performance where you're working or creating your own business and running that. Also, your ability to make a difference in the world. Maybe you have a dream that you want to do something that makes a difference in your community or in the world at large. Is it worth gambling all of that on this person in this relationship? Now, your answer is going to reveal some important things. One, your answer is going to reveal where your priorities are. Your answer is going to reveal if you are still more others-oriented, meaning willing to meet other people's needs and fulfill those needs before your own, or if you are becoming more inner-oriented, where you are meeting your needs first and recognizing that's not a selfish thing, that's actually a self-responsible thing because you're not placing your needs in someone else's hands. You're not expecting someone else to meet them. You're meeting them for yourself, which maybe was never done for you since you were a kid. Maybe this is now part of the reparenting process that you're embracing and stepping into that, right? Or maybe it's the opposite. It still reveals that you'll prioritize someone else over yourself. You will sacrifice yourself. You will people-please. So essentially, the answer to this question, are you willing to gamble at all, shows you where you're at on the scale of one to codependent. Where you're at right now, how codependent are you on that scale? Because codependency doesn't actually mean dependency, even though this word sounds like dependent. You might be very independent, but still codependent, meaning you are people-pleasing. You are putting other people's needs before your own. You want to get that approval and validation by meeting their needs first, but in the process, you're sacrificing yourself. That's what this question is going to tell you. It's also going to tell you where your level of self-worth is, okay? Because if your self-worth is higher then your desire to please that other person, to make them like you, to sacrifice your needs for someone else, you're not going to do that. You're going to honor yourself first. Some risk is necessary in life. Like if you want to be successful, if you want to grow, we have to take some risks in life, but sometimes we're taking the wrong risks or we're risking too much in certain areas of our life, like that relationship, that job, that move, that situation, for whatever reason that doesn't feel good to you. It's causing you pain and tension and heartbreak and confusion and doubt. So the biggest obstacle here, the biggest obstacle to leaving, the biggest obstacle to going no contact, especially with someone like a family member, is the guilt. I hear this over and over again from the people, like that's really the main reason why they're staying or staying in any sort of contact with an abusive family member who has refused to change and accept self-responsibility for what's happened. That guilt, that false guilt essentially is what it is, because it's been placed there through guilt tripping, through expectation of obligation, and through the control of fear. So that guilt starts to go away the more that you value your well-being more than pleasing anyone else or anyone else liking you. You value your well-being more. That's when the guilt goes away. It's just a natural process that happens as you begin to value yourself more. That guilt is really just a tool that someone is using to manipulate you because they know that your self-worth is lower. You don't believe that your well-being is worth more to you than pleasing that other person.
I would appreciate any advice to end this cycle. This cycle that you're talking about, that is the trauma bond, the Stockholm syndrome, the betrayal bond. And in order to get out of that vicious circle, you need to identify that person for who he is. You know, predator, abuser, manipulator, narcissist, sociopath, whatever label you want to put on him to help you remember and realize, like to really break through your understanding so that you can fully accept who he is. It doesn't sound like you're there yet. Okay, so that's the first thing, is you want to really put this label on that person so you can understand who you're dealing with. Because until you see that truth and fully accept it, and again, it's not an intellectual understanding, it's like a visceral, oh my God, kind of moment when that acceptance breaks through and you truly, truly get it. That's when the Stockholm syndrome, the trauma bond, is shattered. And you don't really move forward. You don't really get better until that trauma bond is shattered, because you're still going to be feeling that draw. Like you talked about feeling repulsed and at the same time, like this desire to be connected to him. That is exactly what the trauma bond does. The cognitive dissonance of you're repulsed by who he is because you know that he's a predator, you know that he's a narcissist or a sociopath, a manipulator, a liar. But at the same time, he does these sweet things now and then, and you have these memories back in the beginning when he was putting on this act, feeding you everything that he thought you wanted to hear and that you were looking for in a person, and all those little things he did along the way to dose you with that hope, that false sense of hope. So the cognitive dissonance, he's this, but he's this, he's this, but he's this. What is he? He's a manipulator. That's what that is. And that cognitive dissonance will keep you exhausted. It keeps your mind stuck in there, and you're going back and forth and back and forth. And then it's like it short circuits your mind in a way that then you just kind of go numb, and then you fall back into it. Out of survival, you develop compassion for the abuser or the captor. That's what the Stockholm syndrome is. It's a survival mechanism. It's an unconscious survival mechanism that happens. Your conscious mind has no control of it. The only way to get your subconscious mind on board is to label that person for who they are, to keep looking at that label, to put that judgment on there. Yes, it's a judgment, and that judgment will save your life. You see a lion running in the field. Your brain has to put a judgment on that. Your brain has to put predator on that judgment, because if not, you might go, oh, cute, furry, fuzzy animal, I want to go snuggle up to it. But that lion will have you for dinner because it is a predator. As cute as it might look, as graceful as it might move, as captivating as it might be to watch him in action, that is a predator. And you have to put that judgment on there to save your life, to get yourself out of the Stockholm syndrome. You know, you mentioned being married to your husband and to some degree his mom, right? So his mom is probably the extension of that narcissism. You know, she's obviously not willing to look at the truth. She's going to defend her son. She's trying to use the therapy against you. She's trying to intervene and tell you that what you want in life is wrong. Don't ever listen to someone like that. And I know that you probably felt really trapped because it was the mother of your husband. And I had a similar situation with my ex-mother-in-law. It was horrible. And her thing was always, mon fils, mon fils, mon fils, my son, my son, my son. And it was always that, always. And it was always like she was trying to put me to take care of him at this level that she wanted me to take care of him. But it's so funny because when you look at your mother-in-law's life, and maybe you also need to put that label on your mother-in-law and really understand and like listen to all the things that she said that she wanted you to do for your husband, or she wanted you just to be in general, and look at the amount of projection, you know, coming from her life. Look at the amount of hypocrisy coming from her mouth. You know, this sort of thing, like my ex-mother-in-law would be like, you must cook for my son like this every day. And I'm thinking, this woman has slaves, I mean, servants in her home working for her, like doing all the cooking, all the food. She does nothing. She didn't do anything while he was growing up. She dumped him at his grandparents' home the entire week and picked him up every Friday and dropped him off every Monday morning. Like, she didn't raise her son. you know, but she had these standards that I was supposed to meet up to. So like, you really need to see them for who they are. Just see the bleeding hypocrisy, the lies, these expectations that she has of you, which are just completely, completely unrealistic and probably untrue, you know, her perceptions of who you are and what you want and all of that. So go ahead and put that label on her and on him to help you understand who you're dealing with so that you don't get so confused, and listen to what they want and listen to what they're saying, because it's like they're mobbing. There's a phrase called mobbing, when they gang up against you. When these abusers get together with their flying monkeys, and then it's like, well, you're the only one who feels that way. You're the only one with this problem. Nobody else has a problem with this person but you. And so then you start to feel like it's all your fault. You start to feel very alone, very isolated in your perceptions of reality. And that's exactly what they want, because that's how they can control you. So be aware that's what you're dealing with. And great job moving out of state. I think you said you moved out of state here. Sounds like you went no contact, and I'm not sure if you're still in contact with him at all or not. I would encourage you to be no contact entirely. I would encourage you to read a book called How to Do No Contact Like a Boss by Kim Saeed. You can find that on Amazon. You can get the Kindle version, and the book is fantastic. I think it will really help you to develop that resolve to cut things off and to move forward. I also would encourage you to journal all the abuse that comes to mind. You're probably having lots of flashbacks still about what happened. I would encourage you to journal all of those things, because the abuse amnesia kicks in and you forget those things and the brain deletes those things. And in the moment when you're trying to understand something, you can't access that. Sometimes it's really helpful to have that journal that you can go through and you can read, just remind yourself of what those truths are. Those moments where their words, you know, are causing doubt in your mind, maybe just memories, but they're causing you to doubt yourself. Was it really abuse? Was he really all that bad? Was she really all that bad? Go read that journal. It's gonna snap you out of that. So you remember, yeah, it was that bad. Yeah, it was abuse and it was bad. It was serious and it caused serious harm. And that's why I feel the way I do right now. That journal will really help you to validate the feelings that you have, especially when you get to that point of either self-doubt or this bullying, you know, from the outside, someone trying to get you to change your mind about your perception of reality. And, you know, I would just really encourage you not, you mentioned this new person, right, in his life. I would encourage you not to think about that new woman in his life, not to compare yourself to her, not to fall into that triangulation game that is a triangulation game where he immediately tells you, oh, well, he has this other person in his life, and oh, he's gonna break it off, and or he did break it off. I've heard this story so many times. Or when somebody gets back together with the ex after the hoovering took place, and then the ex had seen someone in between, and then the ex will put out this big display. I mean, I've even heard people say the ex called this person on the phone in front of them and said they can't see them anymore and that they still love this person or whatever, and all they're doing is just, that's just a sadistic game of pleasure for the narcissist and sociopath, because they're playing the game of triangulation. Either way, they're winning. You got this person over here, you got that person over there, this person's jealous, that person's jealous. Everybody's competing over the schmuck over here who's essentially using everybody and abusing everybody. Those are dirty games. Don't fall into that. Don't start comparing yourself to her or to anyone else, or to feel like you're not good enough, or, you know, trying to investigate who she is online and trying to see pictures. Does she compare to you and all that? I would just stay away from that. Like, every time you catch your mind going that direction, you probably notice all the anxiety, the heart fluttering in your chest, the difficulty breathing or the shallow breathing, and then your mind just starts rushing. As soon as you catch yourself looking in that direction, I would just stop, cancel, delete those thoughts and focus on something else, something related to recovery, something related to something that brings you joy in your life, something that makes you happy, something fun, something else, right? Something that feels like you living your life purpose, something positive that's not that, because that's just gonna lead you down that downward spiral crash, and you're gonna feel horrible about yourself. you're going to feel like you have to prove yourself to this person, and maybe it, like, you know, reawakens your desire to claim this person, your ex, in your life again, because you feel like, well, if somebody else wants him, then maybe I was wrong. Maybe he's not abusive after all. No, don't go down that path. It's a very dangerous path, and it was set up that way. Let him go to her. Let him go to her. Let him go to the next one. Just let him go. And I would just not even listen to anything that he has to say. It sounds like you're out of state now, so you're far away. You don't have to deal with that anymore. You're done. You don't have to deal with the in-laws. You don't have to deal with him. I would just cut all that off. Go completely no contact. Focus all of your energy, attention, awareness on getting better, on healing yourself, on moving forward in life, doing the things that you actually enjoy doing things that make you feel amazing, that make you feel like you've come alive, and keep yourself moving away from the past. Because the more you cultivate this sense of passion and purpose in your life, the less you're going to think about the past. The more you generate that sense of purpose, the more it magnetizes you forward and out of the gravity of the past.
What happens when you leave the abuser before they're done with you, before the discard? The other day I was talking to one of my clients, and she said she ended up leaving this guy before he discarded her. And she said, you know, there's a lot of information out there about the discard and how painful it is, and it's brutal, and how to deal with that and how to get over that. But she said, there's actually really little out there about how to find the strength within yourself to get out before they discard you, before they leave you. So I want to talk about that today because it's really, really important. I'm going to share with you these text messages, which are from my personal life. This happened to me 3 weeks ago. And I want to show you how fast it escalates when you take away that narcissistic supply. I'm going to show you the subtle manipulation, and then I'm going to show you how this person totally revealed himself and how amazing it was that I trusted my intuition and that I put my foot down right when I sensed that manipulation and I didn't let it go any farther. Because the me in the past, like 2 years ago, maybe even a year ago, I might have stayed longer. I might have let him come visit me. I might have let things get worse. And thankfully, I left before it got to that point. So I'm going to start right here. So the little bit of background is, this is a person we had a long distance connection for like about 7 weeks or so. I had gone to see him. We'd spent a little over a week together. A lot of wonderful things happened, including this massive transformation that I was able to make because he opened the door. Now, that's my transformation that I made. I did the work, not him. I fully recognize that. But I also recognize that he opened that door for me. And that's why I'm able to leave it this time with gratitude. And this is the first time I'm leaving with gratitude and not resentments. I'm going to talk more about that later. So the deal was, he had bought a plane ticket and he was going to come visit me here in Mexico where I live. His trip was like maybe 3 weeks out, 2 or 3 weeks out at this point. And he started playing this takeaway game for like about a week before. I noticed like he just wasn't really there. Something felt odd. Now the me in the past, the codependent me, would have been trying to like beg him for love or beg him, you know, to like connect with me or to see what's going on or whatever. But the me now, it's like, you just let go. You just step back. When someone plays that takeaway game where they're contacting you, and then they're like, not there, and they're giving you the runaround. They're like, oh yeah, I'm gonna call you back, and you know, any minute, and it's like hours later, and then they're like, oh yeah, I started watching this stupid movie with my friend. Like, that literally happened, and I was like, okay. But I stepped back, and I was starting to feel like something's not really right, but he had this plane ticket to come visit, so I was feeling this dilemma. So here we are, and he's like, I want to be in Mexico. And I'm like, really? Because it doesn't seem like it. And he says, you know, I want you to show me your place. Why do you say that? I said, because you're distant emotionally. And he said, you the same. That's why I'm asking all the time. He wasn't asking all the time, but he was asking in a way that I sensed he was probing to try to elicit a negative reaction from me. If you saw that video I did about don't give your power to the narcissist, like giving them that negative emotional supply when they're looking for it, it's so important. And I wasn't doing that even like about a week before this happened, when he told me that he kissed this woman or this woman kissed him and that's all that happened, whatever. While he was telling me, I was going like this, nodding my head. And he was like, I hate when you do this. I'm like, why? I'm listening to you. He's like, it's like you don't care. And I had this thing in my stomach, and it told me he wanted to get a reaction from me. He wanted me to be upset, and I wasn't. I didn't give him that. I wasn't trying to be attached to that or control that or upset about that in any way. It was just sort of like this wake-up call. So anyhow, he's saying here, you know, and I said, that's my response to your behavior, meaning I'm taking a step back because I'm noticing he's not really there. So he says to this, oh, that's his only response. Oh. And then an hour later, he says, good night, Meredith, kiss. I'm going to have to translate these for you because most of these are going to be in Spanish now. If you don't believe me, just look them up on Google Translate. You know how the game goes with the narcissist. It's like as soon as you're going to go to bed or it's time to go to bed, that's when they love to provoke you because then you become sleep deprived. Like you can't sleep thinking about it and all this, you know, energy is going to that. And then when you're sleep deprived, you're delirious the next day. You're not clear. You're more confused. You're in that brain fog. You're not functioning well. You might go along with things and go with that flow because like, you just don't have the energy to stand up. So he starts in, don't think negatively, just flow without so much attachment and control. But I wasn't attached and I wasn't controlling. And I think that's what was bothering him so much. But so right here, he's gaslighting me. And you know how the spiritual kind of narcissists are where like, they're like, oh, don't think about anything negative and don't say anything negative. Like as soon as you start noticing there's a problem and an issue and you just start speaking up about it and they're like, you're just too negative. You just got to think positive. And he's saying, just flow with positive energy to see what happens between us. Now, to a certain degree, that's true. When you're first meeting someone, you just kind of flow and see what it's going to be. You can't like just define it immediately, right? I get that. But at the same time, that's how spiritual abuse works, is like they use this tenet that's true and then they abuse you by using that tenet. So what he's telling me here, the translation here is like, you know, don't challenge anything, don't speak up about anything, just shut up and just go along with it and we'll just see what happens because this person just saw me as someone passing through his life. And so he says, and that's why I'm going to see you and not Mexico. Think about that. And all of a sudden, again, my stomach dropped and my intuition said, oh shit, like he's just coming to see Mexico. He doesn't care that it's me. It could be anybody who's opening the door, giving him a place to stay. It's not about me at all. And that was kind of a wake-up call because you know how sometimes abusers will actually tell you what they're doing. It's like it slips out or they tell you like it's not like this, but actually it's like that reverse sort of projection. It is like that. So I told him, you know, you're really good at flipping things around because that's what he's doing here is like, I'm like, well, this is your behavior and he's flipping it around. And then now he's attacking me and trying to put me on the defensive as if it was my fault. And so he says, in flipping things around, and I thought he was questioning what that meant. And maybe I used the wrong word in Spanish. And so I said it in English. And he says, I believe that you have a problem with mood. You have a mood problem. Seriously. And I said, wow. Bye. Because at this point, I'm not engaging anymore in this conversation. This is a complete waste of time and energy. And now this person is trying to tell me that I have like some sort of mood disorder because I'm challenging the fact that he's playing manipulation with me. Now, it was so subtle, right? It was so subtle, but my intuition told me something wasn't right. And that's why I started stepping up like that. And then, you know, I'm out by this point. I'm not reading these anymore. But he says, I think about you all the time. But I don't want to miss you all day long because these days I need to save energy. And you know, it's hard for me to create connections, attachments, ties with people. So here's the thing, right? So when I went and I made that massive transformation, he had no problem talking about the issues that I have. I have no problem talking about the issues I have. I'm able to be vulnerable in that way. I'm able to be humble in that way and that I can see my shit and I will change that shit. And so he ended up admitting at that time, a little over a month before this happened, that he had a transformation to make himself and it had to do with this, the fact that he has an attachment disorder. He has a problem. He didn't admit that, but he admitted he has a problem creating healthy emotional attachments with people. But now the game's different. Now he says, sorry for that. And that just sounds so dismissive, but that's me. And so now he's telling me I'm not going to change, right? Accept me for how I am. That's how it is. I'm unable to create any sort of healthy attachment. So he says, and I love you, Meredith. Now, this word te quiero is different than te amo. There's two ways of saying I love you in Spanish. This is not as serious. Te amo is much more serious, much more feelings. This is the kind of how you love your friends and your family and stuff. And he's never said this directly to me. So it's so interesting that like right on the heels of this, he says that and he's like, you know, I love you, Meredith, and I admire you as a person. Seriously, when you arrived, I felt your impressiveness as a woman, and it was really good to feel that. And I'm thinking, this is bullshit. Like, this is just idealization. This is empty. It's superficial. It's just to suck you back in. And then he flips it, because you know how it goes. It flips, flops. It goes idealization, devaluation, idealization, devaluation. That intermittent reinforcement is a key part of the Stockholm syndrome. Abusers know this. Even if it's not a conscious thing, they know they got to be nice to you, then they got to be mean. They got to be nice, they got to be mean. That's what keeps you stuck. That's exactly how it works. So then he switches to, but sometimes you think too much and you create alternative realities. So now he's gaslighting hardcore. Now he's telling me, I'm just imagining all this. I'm creating an alternative reality. And he's preying upon the fact that like a day or two before I left for Peru, this little manipulation thing happened. And I couldn't at the time say that was for sure manipulation because it wasn't a pattern yet. It had happened one time. I gave him a chance. He played that takeaway game where it was contact, 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 and then all of a sudden disappear. And then the next day, he's pretending like it's no big deal. He started the whole conversation putting me on defense. Like as soon as we opened up the video, he says, why are you wearing so much makeup? And I wasn't. So I knew right off the bat, he was trying to put me on the defensive, change the subject. He finally admitted that, you know, if he doesn't reach out to me, you know, for a period of time or doesn't answer my message for a period of time, then I'll miss him. And I said, that's manipulation. And he looked around like to see if anybody heard that. And I said, okay, let me give him the benefit of the doubt because maybe that was just emotional immaturity. Maybe he didn't really realize that that's manipulation. Maybe that opened his eyes and it's not going to happen again. And I was freaking out because I was still back in those days, like freaking out on the fear and the panic, and I was projecting all this stuff from the past, but at the same time, I was sensing that something wasn't right. I just didn't have proof yet. So now he's trying to gaslight me based on that and say that I'm creating alternative realities, that it's not happening as I'm imagining it. And then he says, again, I love you, Meredith, and I'm not okay when you suffer in vain, right? He's not okay because I'm suffering in vain. Now, first of all, I wasn't even suffering. He's making a massive assumption there. And then he says, doesn't it mean anything that I'm going to go see you? And I was like, well, there that is again. That's a total manipulation. Again, it's not about me. He just wanted to come to Mexico. So that's in the morning. Doesn't it mean anything I'm going to go see you? I didn't answer. He says, hello. He says, are you still upset? In reality, I haven't stopped. Today I had this and that, and tomorrow I have this and that. And he's explaining his work and why he's so busy. And I'm like, that's so interesting because I didn't say anything about that. So it's so very clearly how they reveal themselves through the words they say. He's revealing the fact that he's playing upon that he's making himself unavailable to manipulate me, and he's justifying, he just hasn't stopped or whatever. But, you know, just a few nights ago, you know, he was watching the movie with his friend and all that kind of stuff. So I said, I'm not upset. I just don't have energy for your games, like your messages last night. Now, looking back, I probably should have changed this word games to manipulation. I probably should have just directly said the word, but that's how it came out. So then he flips it around again and he says, I don't either have energy to enter into dramas. So now he's implying that I'm creating the drama, right? Because I said something's going on and he's trying to flip it around and flip it around and flip it around. This is like the third time he's flipped it around in this time period that I've showed you. I'm done at this point. I'm done. I've seen enough. This person is just going to flip it around, going to take no self-responsibility. Very clear manipulation. Again, it's still kind of subtle. And in the past, I would have given that the benefit of the doubt. So that was at night. I didn't respond anymore to that. So the next night, almost 24 hours later, he's like, hello. That, by the way, this whole like hello thing in English, it's just hey. The most common form of hoovering is hey. They're testing the water. So he comes up and he's like, hey, I want to be on good terms with you now. And that's exactly what the narcissist wants. Like first they want to provoke you and then they want to like rescue you and comfort you for the exact thing that they caused. You know, they want to be on good terms with you at that point because they want the supply. Now it's been like 2 days since we've really had any kind of real contact. And it's been like more than a week that I've really been there giving him any sort of supply. And so now he's like, I want to be on good terms with you. Or don't you want me to go anymore? Meaning to come visit me, mamacita. So now he's using like baby, honey, you know, that sort of thing to like suck me in, send me signals of love emoji. I'm sending you from here. I mean, what does this stuff even mean? Mountains, railroad, house, nothing. It's emptiness. It's just trying to suck me back. And while these messages were coming in, I was on the phone with my friend who was just going through a very similar situation with her person, except she had noticed the subtle manipulation. She called it out. But her guy was like, I'm so sorry, forgive me, I didn't mean to hurt you. No, there is that kind. And then sometimes there's the kind that starts off like that and then gets nasty when they realize like you're done. And I'm going to show you how nasty this gets. So talking on the phone to my friend, we're talking about how this is the first time both of us are leaving with gratitude and not resentments because we didn't let these guys get in as deep. We had better boundaries. We recognized the subtle manipulation. We ended it immediately. And I was just thinking of the words that I needed to say to him to end this, you know, and I know no explanations, don't go into anything, certainly don't get on the phone and like get in any conversation. Like I knew that was just going to turn ugly. I just wanted to keep it on text, keep it simple. I said, I don't want you to come anymore. This isn't what I want. I'm grateful to you for the experiences that we have shared. I wish you all the best. That was just simple. Expressed my gratitude. I expressed this isn't what I want. I told him not to come. He says, wow, the next morning. Okay, but I have my ticket. So anyhow, recommend me a place to stay or visit. Thanks. And I didn't answer that because one, I'm not a tour guide. And two, I'm not trying to get involved in any kind of conversation with this guy. I know that's just a hook to get me talking about us, for him to come see me, blah, blah, blah. And I'm really sorry that he had this plane ticket, but he should have thought about that before he decided to treat me with disrespect, before he decided to manipulate me and expect me to go along with that. I'm not going to take the responsibility of the consequences of his actions. So I'm not answering him. Now, isn't this funny? Like how many phone calls over a 12-hour period? This is the guy who had no time for me, you know, nothing but excuses. And I'm just imagining it and I'm controlling and I'm attached. And now he can't stop blowing up my phone. Then he says, hello, because I didn't answer. And then he says, so then are we never going to talk anymore? Is that what you want? And I said, no, thank you. I need to save my energy. I probably didn't need to say that second sentence. I probably should have just stopped it with no thank you. This was a little bit me returning his words back to him, and it was 100% true. I was not about to invest my energy in that. I nowadays have a zero tolerance policy for manipulation, for abuse. I have zero energy, time, and patience for that. And his response the next morning was, by the way, I wake up, right, 25 unread messages. And it's like, ha 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 ha, because he knows I'm using his words. He says, okay, good luck with everything. I hope that you have a life full of relaxation and good vibes, but be careful about being unhappy, not for other people, but for your own mind. I'm only telling you that your mind betrays you in the worst way. Now, this is incredible. Like, not only is this all gaslighting, right here we have some projection. He's telling me that my mind is betraying me. Where my mind was very clear, this is manipulation. He was betraying me. He was manipulating me and trying to tell me that it wasn't happening and that it was in my mind. This is just a projection. Abusers love to project. I have only ever sent you good vibrations since I met you. I've only ever sent you good vibrations, he says. But now I understand why you move the way you move. Kiss Meredith, take care of yourself. 3 hours later, I didn't respond. So he's not done yet. He's about to go real low. He says, I always thought, why to this woman do all these bad and negative things happen? Now, he knew a little bit about my past. He knew that I had been in many relationships with abusive people. He knew that my mother is that way. He knew that my grandfathers were that way. He knew what happened to me in Peru because he asked me why I didn't want to go back there and why, you know, he was trying to get me to go there. I told him about my former business partner, the other person that was working with us, the sociopath, the other narcissists that were around there. A lot of trauma that took place. I hadn't wanted to go back there. So now he's taking my history and using it against me. And now he's implying that I deserved it. You know, why do such bad things happen to you? Now I understand why, he says. You don't give a crap that I bought my ticket to see you. And knowing that I don't have a lot of money for this trip, because supposedly we were going to relax in your town and I was going to spend a lot. This doesn't even make sense. He was going to spend a lot. So I offered to help with his plane ticket. And the deal was he was actually going to go visit one of his friends in another Latin American country, either on his way here or on the way back. And he would extend, you know, the trip to come see me. I offered to give him some money. At first he said yes. Then he said no, just in case things don't work out with us. He doesn't want me going around telling people what a bad person he is. Number two, while I was with him during that time that I was in Peru, his ex, who is the mother of his child, had some kind of issue with her plane tickets, and he sent her immediately $5,000. His plane ticket was $500. He had no problem sending her $5,000, but now he's trying to manipulate me by telling me what an awful thing it was to do and how I deserve all these bad things because I told him not to come because he had a plane ticket because I didn't want to put up with his manipulation. And then he says, nothing matters to you how you hurt other people, how I hurt other people. Perhaps it's because you already found a new companion, which doesn't affect me, right? Because for a manipulative person, especially a narcissist, like they think they're such the shit that they can't imagine that you would leave them to be alone, that there must be someone else, right? There's no one else. And then of course he has to say, which doesn't affect me, but clearly it does. And he says, but yeah, you shit on me because I could have spent that money on another trip. Well, you coulda, woulda, shoulda thought about that before you manipulated me. And he says, I believe that now I understand why life has treated you so bad, because many, many people here think that you're crazy, including those that you think are your friends and love you. They themselves told me, be careful with that crazy woman. Yesterday, someone that saw me with you said, with that woman, nothing happens. She's half crazy. And I defended you until that person made me understand why. Now, this is just low, low, low. So you know when you're leaving an abusive person, there's two things they tend to tell you. One is that you're crazy, because if you think that you're crazy, then you're going to doubt all of your perceptions of reality. You're going to doubt the fact that this person is abusing you. You're going to be afraid to tell other people. The second thing that they tell you, no one will believe you. And they're going to tell you that directly or indirectly. And what he's telling me here indirectly by trying to tell me all these people think that I'm crazy is that no one will believe me. Like, don't you dare tell anybody. He's kind of like a public person there. Like, people know him. And I doubt most of the people realize who he is because he's quite covert. So basically what he's telling me is no one's going to believe you and try to make me think that I'm crazy. But I've seen this before. I know exactly what this is and I know who I am. And I know that neither of my friends would have said this. I have two close friends that live in that area. Anybody else that I know there are just acquaintances and people that I knew connected with the former sociopath business partner, etc. It could be that it was one of those acquaintances who had heard the smear campaign from the former business partner and now heard his smear campaign and said things. But more than likely, this is all made up, just like everything else that he's making up to gaslight me into thinking that I'm the one with the problem. And he says here, and now that you do this, you're confirming that theory, which in reality is another projection, because all of this that he's saying to me, all of this nastiness and lowness, this is him confirming to me that I was right, that I recognized the manipulation, that I recognized he was a manipulator, and he's just revealing himself in these messages. He says here, in reality, instead of continuing to help people, you're doing them more damage. They are people that would follow any advice because they're lost. And for that reason, they follow your advice from someone who can't even take care of herself or deal with herself. So now he's gone so low. He's not only tried to tell me that I'm crazy and no one will believe me and everybody thinks I'm crazy, which is a total lie, but now he's trying to get me to doubt the very thing that I live for, like my sense of purpose, which is helping people, this work that I do. Now he's got to tell me that I'm leading people astray, that I'm hurting people. He says here, you should look for help before you continue helping people because you can cause them more confusion. What this is right here, this is like when the devil tries to tempt you to let go of your purpose, tries to tempt you to stop helping and making a difference in the world. And the reality is that because I ended this before he actually showed me his horns, now he has to say this stuff. Don't wait for the devil to show you his or her horns before you end that, because by then it's too late. If I had let this guy come visit me, if I had let him in any deeper, I eventually would have seen those horns and I would have been hurt because I would have opened myself up too much like that. So I'm so grateful that I ended it and that I disattached my heart and my heartstrings from him before it got to this level. And then he says this, oh wait, and I'm telling you this with the best vibes of the world and hoping that you realize what you're doing, because crazy people stop being crazy when they realize that they're crazy. Like, how many times has he told me that I'm crazy now? And your mind is so powerful that you're always going to find an exit for this. But I tell you again, you need to redeem yourself before something. You trust too much in yourself. You trust too much yourself. When you've been through abuse, the thing that's most damaged is your sense of self-trust. Like, you lose your trust in yourself, in others, in the universe. It's a whole process of rebuilding that trust. I have rebuilt that trust considerably compared to where I was a year ago, 2 years ago, 10 years ago. That's the last thing an abusive person wants you to have is self-confidence and self-trust. Because if you trust yourself and you trust your reality, you're going to call this shit out for what it is and you're not going to put up with it and they're not going to be able to get what they want from you. So he has tell me that I'm trusting too much in myself. And you should unattach yourself from all of your toxic thoughts. I only have sent you good vibes. How many times did he already say that, right? Because it's like he has to convince himself of that maybe, or maybe he's trying to convince me. And look how you react. You left me planted. You left me stranded. I left him stranded. Mm-hmm. But it's okay, he says. What goes around comes around. La vida da vueltas is like life goes around. Goes around, comes around. So now he's implying that I'm gonna get some kind of negative karma because of the way that I'm hurting him. And he says, and I only continue wishing you the best. Right, like I'm some kind of fool. Like I'm gonna read all this shit and think that he's wishing me the best? I mean, wow, wow. Oh, and again, and I'm sending you the best vibrations. Because if I'm saying it, it must be true. Oh, but again, but you need to look for psychological help. Really, you need it. I felt it from the first day that I met you in person. But wait a second, isn't that funny? Because like 2 days ago when he was like, and I felt your impressiveness as a woman that first day I met you and it was so good to feel that. Both of those are total bullshit. One was meant to suck me in and this one was meant to devalue me. Oh, and my friends in Cusco told me the same just from looking at you. Right. Maybe his friends thought I was crazy hanging out with him. Goodbye. Have a great Sunday. So at this point, I wake up, I read this stuff. I'm like, wow, blocked him immediately. Didn't respond to this at all. Do not respond to this. If you respond in any way, shape, or form to defend yourself, to tell him that he's wrong, anything. I'm sorry about the planes, anything. They're going to use that as an excuse to suck you back in, to abuse you more. I'd seen enough. I blocked him all over the place. He has no way of getting in. That's it. Assertion. I heard Brendan Burchard say this in one of his videos. Assertion is owning your reality. And that's what I did right here. I owned my reality. I recognize this as gaslighting. I recognize this as manipulation. I recognize that doesn't describe me at all. I know myself. I didn't need to stand up and be like, well, no, it's like this and you're this and that. That doesn't necessarily have to be the only way that you look assertive. Assertion is owning your reality. It's being able to stand centered and grounded in yourself and know that all of that is a lie. And you know that they're always going to say this. You're just going to have to be willing when you're ending it with a manipulator, an abuser, a narcissist, whatever you want to call them. You're going to have to accept the fact that they are going to say stuff like that. You're going to have to accept the fact that they're going to have their own story in which they're the victim and you're this awful person and they're going to try to tell you all this stuff and you have to be willing to walk away. Don't give it any time. Don't give it any energy. Don't give it any reaction or any response because it's just going to suck you back in. It's just going to keep you in that. Don't wait for it to get bad before you get out. As soon as you see that sign, you see one thing, like I told you at the beginning, I saw that one thing and I gave him a chance because it was a one-off. People fuck up. We all fuck up. I fuck up. I'm not going to just write somebody off because they made one mistake. Now it happens two times. Now it's a pattern. And then when you call it out and they flip it back, now you know for sure that person's not listening to you. Don't defend yourself. Don't waste your time and energy defending yourself because they're not listening to you. They don't care. They only want their reality. As soon as you have that confirmation the second time and you know in your intuition, even though it's subtle and you haven't seen any of this yet at the end, it's so subtle. Listen to your intuition and end it. ASAP. I mean, immediately, the sooner the better. Because the longer you say, the more danger there is. The more danger it is that they get in deeper, that they hurt you more, that you do something that you regret. I was able to walk out of this with elegance. I was able to walk out with grace and with gratitude because I didn't respond to any of that because I didn't do anything wrong. Now, he might go around telling people that I'm this awful person because, you know, I ended this when he had a plane ticket, and that's fine. I have to be willing to deal with the fact that he's going to do that. I also have to know that I made the right decision because if I had let him come, it would have been much worse. And I've made that mistake in the past, like weeks before I was going to get married back in 2001. I started noticing this stuff. I started telling my friends and some family members and everybody was like, you need to cancel that wedding. Like, please don't marry that guy. But out of shame, I didn't. I was too ashamed to face the public whatever was going to happen by telling people that I'm not going to marry this guy. So I married him. Huge mistake. Huge mistake. It took me a long time to recover from that marriage. And that was the mistake I made in the past. There will always be that thing, right? Just today, I was talking to another client who needs to end it and just trying to come up with the words and have this difficult conversation, you know, just like, well, this thing is coming up, and that thing. I'm like, there's always going to be that thing, that plane ticket, that vacation, that marriage, somebody's surgery, somebody gets sick, some concert that you guys bought tickets to. There's always going to be that thing. And if you just keep postponing it and postponing it, when are you going to draw the line? When are you going to get out? The sooner the better. I hope that was helpful for you. I'm pretty sure some of you have seen very similar things when you're trying to end it with a narcissist and just seeing how fast things escalate. Don't give in to that. Don't give in. Stand strong, own your reality, and then go get a reality check from your best friends. That's what I did after this. I sent these messages, you know, to my friends who speak Spanish. I talked to my friends and cousin, you know, who speak English and told them about what happened. And everybody was like, Ma, don't you believe that? Like, not for a minute. I'm like, I know. But there is that fleeting moment where the person, you know, they say it with such conviction and confidence that like you start to doubt yourself again. Don't doubt yourself. Trust your reality. And when in doubt, go get a reality check from people who actually love you and know you.
The fear that a lot of us get, and part of like the anxiety and even panic attacks sometimes, is, well, what do you do if you run into them? I have both some suggestions of how to avoid much of an interaction, and then also what to do if you just get so caught off guard in the moment, how to react, how to respond. So in order to kind of create the appearance of, I don't really want to get into any kind of conversation or anything like that to anybody who wants to approach you, wearing your headphones is a great idea. When you're out in public, when you're in a place that you know you might run into that person, like whether it's the gym, maybe they live in your apartment building, and you know there's a possibility that you could run into them, especially on the weekends or something like that. So wearing your headphones, always having those in, it's like a big stop sign to other people. And whether or not you're playing music or not, you know, like you can have music on, that's awesome. It just pumps you up, puts you in a good mood. Maybe you want to listen to YouTube while you're walking around, but maybe you just don't feel like listening to anything. You want to be alone with your thoughts, but you wear those anyways, just because it really kind of puts that stop sign so nobody approaches you. And wearing sunglasses too, because that allows you the ability not to make eye contact should you see them. Should you see them approaching or something, you could pretend like you didn't see them and keep walking and not make eye contact. And then you've got the headphones on, so you don't hear them calling you, even if you do hear them calling you. So that's what I would recommend to kind of like create that appearance of, don't talk to me, I'm not really into engaging with people. So what to do if like they catch you off guard, like, you know, you walk outside and boom, there they are right there. And it's like, you're like face to face. So the first thing I recommend is to keep moving. Okay. Keep moving. If you are already moving, keep moving in that direction. Focus on your goal. Like, this is what you're going to do. This is where you're going. This is what's happening. You're not into whatever their agenda is, you know, and their agenda is like to stop you and talk to you. You're not into any of that. You're focused. Don't put on airs or smugness. Like, I'm so important. I'm so busy. That's not going to help you at all. That's going to attract this narcissist to want to like get in on that, because that looks juicy. There's like something good over there. You just want to look like it's just so boring and you're in a hurry and you just don't have time for that. But there's nothing really interesting going on here. So don't paint the picture that this is a really interesting thing, because you don't want that person like running after you and like tagging along like a lost puppy, because a lot of psychopaths do that. I don't know if any of you have noticed, if you were in a relationship with like a psychopathic kind of character, the parasitic type, they follow you around like a lost puppy at first. Like, they're on you. You know, you imagine like a kid is like holding on to like the mom or dad's leg and they're like going around with the parent like on the leg. Like, that's what it's like at first sometimes. So you don't even want to welcome that. Don't attract that by looking totally uninteresting and just busy and focused. So keep moving. Also, make sure that your body language is facing away from them. So say you happen to come right up to them, or they happen to corner you and come straight up in front of you, right? So what you want to do is make sure that your hips and your feet are facing a different direction, because when you're into a conversation with someone, you want to be facing them. You want to have your hips facing them. You want to have your feet facing them. That body language tells that person that you're into this conversation. You want to engage with them. You want to keep talking about this. If you turn such that your hips are going in a different direction, your feet are facing a different direction, it's like you're already going that direction and the person's over there. Like, subconsciously, it's creating that language. And also because it's going to remind you to keep moving in that direction. So you don't want to stop. Remember, you don't owe them your politeness. You don't owe them even like any sort of civil kind of conversation. All you really want to do to put up the boundary for yourself, and because the hard part is, well, you know, do I just totally ignore them? Like, it's so hard to do, right? Especially if there's other people and you're like, well, I don't want to look like a bitch. I don't want other people to think like that I don't want to talk to them. So, you know, what you can do is just like, hey, and like, you just keep on going. But like, this for you might be the sign of the boundary. This might be like, hey, step away. And it's almost like, because when you put out this hand like this, it says stop. It's like a big push because your energy is coming off of your hand as well. So it's like, hey, no thank you. But on the face, on the surface, you're like, hey, gotta go in a hurry, you know, running late. And you just keep on going. So make sure that your body language is always facing away and you just keep moving. If for some reason you were like stopped, dead stopped, and they just totally caught you off guard and came right up in your personal space, because you know how they do, and they come right up to you and like you feel like you're trapped in there. Oh my gosh, I gotta go. I'm sorry. I just realized the time. I'm running late. Wow, you know, and just take off and don't even wait for their response. Because remember, this is not a conversation. You're not trying to have a conversation. It's not a two-way thing. It's more like, here's what I'm putting out there so that you stop. And a narcissist is usually going to be more concerned with public perception. So they're usually not gonna make like a total jackass of themselves in public. Like, hey, wait, hey, they're not gonna do that kind of thing usually, unless they're like super, super, super desperate. And sometimes they'll get to that point too. And if that's the case, just don't respond to that. Just let them do what they do and just let it be a spectacle for other people to notice. And like, it has nothing to do with you. Remember, you don't have to own that. And this is something that I've struggled with in the past. Like, when people do awkward things or say awkward things, feeling like I had to clean up that mess, or like I had to diffuse that or make them feel better about themselves or something. And like, I could have been in the line at the coffee shop, you know, lady in front of me like says something really awkward and I'm supposed to respond to that. And when I finally realized that I didn't owe anybody that. That's not mine. I didn't put that out there. So somebody puts it out and you're in line and you're stuck because you're about to order next, right? You're not gonna like run away. But just to make it really clear that you're not engaging, you know, when someone does that and they drop whatever awkwardness, you just kind of go, there's nothing there. You're not reacting, you're not pacifying, you're not enabling, because enabling is you pick it up, right? It's like they threw the ball, if you hit it, engaging in that game, and now you took it on. Now maybe you just like say something awkward just because like she said something awkward, then you say something awkward, now it's just an awkward situation. You don't have to own that. You don't have to deal with that. Just let them say what they say and just kind of like, and that's it. You don't have to do anything more. They'll usually just drop it right there. They're gonna probably look for like, you know? And then just be interested in something else, something to order, something that's for sale, some sign, your cell phone, right? Whatever it is, you don't have to own that. So these are some tips if you should run into them in public. And just remember, creating some kind of trigger, and you'll wanna like practice this even in the mirror. I know that sounds silly, but it can be really traumatizing in the moment when you run into that person. Like, the amygdala switch can get kicked on, the amygdala hijack. You remember the abuse that took place, or maybe you didn't get into a relationship with this person, but you already know who they are and you don't want to go there. You remember from the past what that abuse looks like. So it triggers you, like every, you know, heart starts beating. And when the amygdala switch gets hijacked, you lose like that thinking brain. Like, you use the capacity to access the part of your brain that could think of strategies and things to do and things to say, right? So you want to set this up so it's like an automated response from you. It's like superhero training. Go through this training and then you're in the moment and then the training takes over. You don't have to think about it. So if you practice this, hey, and walk away, and you just keep practicing this, you know, and moving your body so that your body remembers too. It becomes like kinesthetic memory. When I see that person, I turn my body away and I make a sound, you know, I make a sign like this and hey, see ya, and I'm on my way. So whatever that is for you, that's what I like to do, because that's my trigger. That's how I set it up in my body. So you set it up for yourself. So whatever that feels most comfortable, whatever feels like you're putting up that boundary and you're comfortable with how you're handling that. You're not being like a total bitch or a total jerk. You're giving that sense because you don't want to trigger their aggression or their need to like one up you. So if you're like super rude at them again, again, that's going to look juicy and they're going to want to get in on that. So if it just looks like this, you know, neutral kind of like, they can't really argue with that. Nothing sticks. You're not giving them an in, you know, and again, if they try to follow you, just, I'm in a hurry. I got to go. I'm sorry. I got my mind focused on this meeting I got, whatever it is, but just like get them to back off, because remember, that's your space. You're entitled to have your space. You're entitled to feel safe in society, in your neighborhood, at the gym, in your apartment building, wherever it might be that you're used to running into these people or that you could run into them. You want to be able to remember that you have the sanctity of your space, and this is part of your boundary creating. You have the right to set these boundaries. And in the past, you were taught to feel guilty and ashamed, most likely, to set and enforce your boundaries. Do not give in to that. Do not let other people make you feel guilty or ashamed for setting your boundaries. You have every right to set the boundaries that make you feel safe and that allow for you to be healthy and sane.
Thank you so much for tuning into this episode of the Inner Integration Podcast. I hope you learned something today that helps you see from a new perspective so you can take new action and transform your life after narcissistic abuse. Remember, you are enough. You matter, and you got this. If you liked this episode and want to hear more, you can subscribe to get automatic updates on new podcast episodes as they're released. Visit us online at www.innerintegration.com, where you'll get a free 3-part video course when you enter your name and email on the homepage. Get loads of more free content to help you heal after narcissistic abuse on YouTube, Facebook, and Instagram. Big hug to you.